Investor Intelligence provides general information only. You should consider seeking independent advice to see how this information relates to your unique circumstances. Please refer to the terms and conditions available at investorintelligence.com.au for more.
Welcome to this week's episode of Investor Intelligence, your weekly podcast on all things investment, hosted by me, Jacob Kearns. Today, I'm joined by Mentor Team Director at the Property Mentors, Herman Bernardi, and we will be discussing the ins and outs of sourcing a winning investment property. Hello, Herman.
Hey, Jacob.
So would you say that how do I source a property would be a fairly common question that you get asked?
Yeah, I would say it's probably the most common question we get asked.
And so what should someone be maybe asking instead if they're just starting out?
Well, there's many other questions that are a better question to ask than that. I think when people open up with that question, it's a clear indication that they've kind of jumped the gun a little bit. They forgot about their strategy. They forgot about their educational readiness. So the smarter questions to ask would be things like, why am I investing? What am I trying to get out of my investing? What is my strategy for investing? How do I source a good investment property rather than just sourcing a property? Anyone can source a property if you've got access to the internet. And how does that property fit into my strategy? So I think without having a strategy, that question is a bit mute, because without knowing what you're trying to achieve in your property investing, you could go out and buy a property that's not actually feeding the next property purchase. So I think taking a step back, understanding what your strategy is and why you are doing what you're doing would be the smarter question, or should be the first question that anyone asks.
So going off that, based off someone's strategy, would you say it's fair to say that what might be a good property for one person may not be a good property for another?
Yes and no. Well, I think a good investment property, a good investment property is always going to have the right investment fundamentals around it, right? It's about what you want to achieve with that property. Like, is this your first investment? Is it your third investment? Are you buying this property for yield? Are you buying this property for capital growth? Are you buying it for tax benefits? So in terms of a good investment property, it should always have the right investment fundamentals, like is there population moving to that area? Is there the right infrastructure going into that area? Are you buying at the right price? Where is that particular suburb in the property clock, right? If you can answer all of those questions and it then feeds into your strategy, then it's a good investment property. So I'll give you an example. Say we've got one investor that's got $1.1 million in a borrowing capacity. We've got another investor that's got $700K as a borrowing capacity. We're going to be looking at very different properties for those two investors, right? Because $700K in today's market, you just can't go out and really buy the top kind of investment properties for $350K per property, right? So we're not going to be splitting that borrowing capacity up into two. Maybe a couple of years ago we would, right? Where if you have $1.1 million, right, the smarter option would be to go and buy two investment properties, because you're separating your risk and you're working in two different markets. It tends to get you a better rental yield, because a $1.1 million property might be capped at $800 per week in rent, where we have got properties on our books for $500K that can give you $500 per property per week in rent. So your yield's better and you've got two assets growing in value rather than just one. So it's bringing it back to the strategy and understanding how you are using your leverage from the bank and what you're trying to achieve out of that property. So the term good property, I don't think there's such a thing as just a blanket good property to invest
in. Right. And there's typically a trade-off, right, between capital growth and yield. Is that correct?
Not necessarily. I think it depends on supply and demand. So in previous podcasts I've done here, I speak a lot about supply and demand. So it's understanding what you're trying to achieve through your investing and being able to plan that out with your mortgage broker, with a mentor, with your accountant to go, okay, well, this is my first property. I want to buy another property in 2-3 years, right? But I can't save a deposit that fast, right? So then you're going to go into more stable markets like Victoria, where we've got a long history that we can revert back to go, okay, well, this particular area has grown by 8% year on year for the past decade. So the argument is that it'll continue on growing at that rate. Where if you're on your third or fourth property and you've got a couple of properties that are heavily negatively geared and it's affecting your cash flow, right? You might look at areas like, I'll use Airlie Beach as an example, where the yields are through the roof to help with your cash flow. So for us, when we're looking for properties for our clients, we typically try to not lean to one side or the other. We try to find a nice middle ground,
right,
on both sides. We need to have some evidence that capital growth is going to happen, and we need to make sure that, I guess, this investment fits in with your lifestyle, right? People tend to quit when things get too difficult. So if you go and buy a property in an area purely for capital growth, but you won't be able to go out for dinners and you're going to be eating 2-minute noodles for the next 5, 6, 7 years, you're just going to quit and you're going to sell that property. Right. So then you're back to square one. It's about, again, going back to the strategy, understanding what your needs are, understanding what you're trying to achieve, and then finding a property that fits in with that rather than the other way around.
Yeah. Okay. So what factors should someone consider when determining whether or not a property fits into their overall strategy?
It goes back to what I've just mentioned before, is what are you trying to achieve through your investing? Right. If you've sat down and you've created a strategy, the strategy is going to tell you what kind of property you need to source, right? The strategy is going to tell you, do I need to focus more on capital growth here? Should I go into an area that's got more stable capital growth because I am planning to buy another property in 2 years and I'm going to be relying on this property for my next deposit? So by sitting down, understanding your why, creating the strategy will tell you this is the right property to go into next.
Okay. So going off that, to give an example, say someone's strategy or long-term goals are to just set themselves up for a comfortable retirement, what should that person be looking at?
What is a comfortable retirement?
Well, I guess that depends on, you know, a different person, but I guess just to not be relying on a pension, can travel when they want, can eat good foods, what would they be looking at? How many properties would they firstly need, and what would their strategy be to get that amount of property?
Okay, how much time do they have before they retire?
Good question as well. So I can definitely understand where it varies and why strategy is so important. I guess it probably would be hard to give a blanket answer for these questions when it's no particular person sitting down.
Yeah. Well, the best way of looking at that is if you were, let's say, in your late 40s, early 50s, right? And we know it takes 25 years to pay off a mortgage. You can do it quicker, but let's just say for argument's sake, 25 years to pay off a mortgage. It's not going to be my recommendation that you go and put yourself in millions and millions and millions of dollars worth of debt, right? Because you're not going to have time to pay off that debt. Right. And having a portfolio at time of retirement worth $2 million, if you owe $1.9 million on that portfolio, isn't passive income.
Yeah.
It's just debt, right? So it depends on the life stage, how much time you've got, right? And there's different strategies for people at that stage. You might buy a little bit more than what you need to if you've got the borrowing capacity to do that. And then when it comes close to retirement, you might sell off a proportion of your portfolio to reduce the debt on the rest of the portfolio. So you've got some sort of passive income coming from that. And then you also need to be asking questions like, Are you still going to be owing any money on your PPR? Is it going to be a mortgage for your PPR? And what does that retirement look like? Do you just want to sit at home and work in the garden, or do you want to travel the world? Like, you really need to kind of pack that out first and understand what is realistic for your situation, and then do what you can to, I guess, make the situation better. If you've left it too long, right, and you haven't gotten into investment and you've got less than 20 years left before you retire, right, we need to set the goals based on your situation. Otherwise, like I said, you're just going to end up in retirement with a bunch of debt and no strategy to get out of that debt.
Right.
Here at The Property Mentors, we have decades of experience investing in property. We know what to look for and what kind of impact it can have on your portfolio. We have access to brokers, accountants, and property managers to make sure your portfolio performs. Visit thepropertymentors.com.au to learn more.
So let's then maybe compare the strategy of someone who might be a little bit younger, mid, early, late 20s, compared to someone who is in their, you know, 40s, 50s.
Yeah. So it depends on the asset base now, but let's just say, for argument's sake, both people don't have any assets, right? If you're in your younger years, if you're in your late 20s, early 30s, right, you're in the best position. And if you're listening to this podcast now, you should be investing right now, because the secret ingredient in property investing isn't selecting the right property. It isn't utilizing your tax to its fullest extent. It is time in the market.
Right.
Right. It's about holding a property, reducing the debt on that property, and creating a passive income. Right. So you don't get to retirement and you've got your super, whatever it is. I think the stats at the moment is that the average male has a super of $357,000 at time of retirement, and the average female has $280,000 at time of retirement. Just ask yourself this question. If you had that at time of retirement, how many years do you have before that money runs out?
Right. And so would you say for a lot of people, that's enough, not enough?
No, definitely not enough. Well, I know what my spending habits are, and that's not going to last very long. So there's two aspects to that. The fact that it isn't going to last very long, but it's also the psychological aspect of going, okay, I've retired now, and now I've got a pool of money that I need to draw out of, and that pool isn't getting refilled because I'm not working anymore. There's no more super going in there, right? Yeah. So the reason why we do what we do is to avoid that exact thing, that we've got income coming in even when we're not working. So the more important thing is, if you are in your late 40s, is to find out what is realistic for you right now in terms of being able to reduce that debt, your ability to borrow, all of those kind of things. Starting straight away and allowing 20 years in the market for that capital growth to work for you to reduce that debt. And then when you get to retirement, even if you only have one property, that's $20,000 a year that gets topped up, right? Yeah. If you've got two properties, we're probably talking $40,000, $50,000 a year. Three, four, if you want 100,000, right? You probably need about four good quality properties paid off by time of retirement.
Right. And again, it just comes back to what you're trying to achieve and what your goals are in that retirement.
Yeah. We tell all of our members, the selecting of property is the very last thing you do, right? So if someone becomes a member today, right, we are not going to talk about property for a good 2 months.
Okay.
Right. Unless they've specifically asked us that, hey, we've got some restrictions and we need to secure something by this date because our finances are going to change, then we would do that. But if someone's coming in, they haven't invested before, it's a good 2 months of education, making sure we get all our ducks lined up. So when you're actually going into the market, you can make quick business decisions based on what gets put in front of you at that time.
Right. And so what are some of the other things that you haven't covered that you might be looking at with a member who's just come on board before you actually source property? Is there anything else?
Yep. Okay. So what is your leveraging power, right? What's your saving habits? What's your career going to look like over the next few years? Are you in a job where you've kind of reached the the peak of income? And is this all we're going to get to work with for the rest of the time? Or do we have career progression planned with salary increases? Right. What's your current debt like? How much do you owe on your PPR? Are you going to be able to pay that off by time of retirement? The questions are endless, right?
Yeah.
But that's why it's important that anyone, I guess people are listening to this podcast to get an understanding of how to go and find the right property themselves, yeah. Right? My advice for that would be do more research than what you think is necessary, right? And then look at the total picture together and go, am I going to be better off with this property or is this going to put stress on my life?
Yeah.
And if the answer is this is going to put stress on my life, are you willing to sacrifice that part kind of thing? That's the best way of picturing that rather than thinking I want to buy an apartment in Prahran.
Right.
Because that's going to be a good investment for me, yeah. Kind of thing.
Okay. So for someone who is listening, maybe they have gone out or will go out and consider all these factors, what's a typical process for someone who might not necessarily be working with someone? What's the typical process that people usually do when they are sourcing properties themselves?
They go into realestate.com or domain.com and they inquire about a property, they go and look at the property, and then they put in an offer. Like I said, finding a property in Australia is not a difficult thing.
Right.
Right. It's about understanding what kind of research you need to do with property. Like our members, not once have we sold anything that's come from realestate.com or anything like
okay.
that. Right. And the reason being is we don't want our members to get into bidding wars.
Right. Right?
We don't want them to go and look at a property that's listed for 500. A bit of negotiation happens. It then sells for 530, right? You haven't done the numbers on 530. You've done the numbers on 500,
yeah.
Right? So when we go out to the market, the budget is this. And we go out there saying we need something for 500 with this contract structure settling at this time. And then we go and find something for that rather than tweaking. So that's the difference between using a company like us and doing it yourself. That's one aspect. Don't get into bidding wars with people. And then obviously that goes on from don't go and buy your investments at auction.
Right.
Right. Because it should be a business decision, right? You should, unless you can do the numbers right there, right then, and you understand your after-tax cash flow position based on this investment, right? You shouldn't really be purchasing things unless you've run the yeah. numbers.
And another thing we usually talk about as well is don't necessarily buy a property in your area just because you're familiar with it.
Yeah. So in terms of buying in your own area, Australia is a whole continent, yeah. right? To say that if you live in Perth, that your best investment opportunity is just happens to be in the area that you live in out of the hundreds, thousands of suburbs across the country is delusional.
Right.
It yeah. really is. Now, I'm not saying you are not living in a good investment area. What I'm saying is that there is probably, if you do the research, there's probably going to be a better area for you to invest in or a better way for you to leverage your money.
Okay. And so when or if someone was going to source a property, what should they maybe do instead?
If you want to do it yourself, right, your options really are realestate.com or go to domain.com, or you're going to Google and find out what developments are happening and you're going to reach out directly to sales agents for vendors, right? So if you've decided that's the path that you're going to follow, right, utilize government websites like Plan Victoria. That is a massive document that basically explains exactly what the Victorian government's plans are in terms of infrastructure spending and accessibility to major employment hubs and all of those kind of things. So first you need to understand the infrastructure, right? You need to understand whether that's a long-term infrastructure or is it like what's going to happen in Brisbane for the Olympics? Is it a short-term thing, but there's not actually any ongoing infrastructure yeah. planned? So it's the first thing you need to understand. The second thing you need to understand is a property is a business. The way you make money from that business is by renting it out. Is there enough demand in that specific area that your property is not going to sit vacant for weeks on end? Is there enough demand in that area to drive prices of rent up over time? And how do we know about demand? There's many websites you can go and look at and see where the population in Australia is moving okay. to, right? A couple of other things to look out for is access to schools, universities, public transport, sporting arenas, all your lifestyle side of things, and then employment hubs. People tend to live close to where they work, right? So, or tend to live in an area where it's accessible to get to work. So where are the closest employment hubs, right?
Right.
Okay. And then the next thing you want to look at is you want to look at the surrounding suburbs. How have they performed, right? Is there a suburb closer to a CBD or a highly sought after area than the suburb that you are buying in? Are you going to see that flow and effect where, I'll use Brighton as an example, where people get priced out of Brighton, so they go to the next suburb. Once enough people get priced out of Brighton and move to the next suburb, then that suburb becomes too expensive and then you get that flow and effect. So the property that you're purchasing, where does that sit in the property clock? Right. And then the last question is it a new property? If you're buying it for investment purposes and you are buying it for the purposes of taking advantage of your tax position, then you need to look at what's your depreciation benefits, right? Is it a new property or was it built in the 80s and I'm essentially only going to be able to claim my interest kind of thing? So those are some of the questions I would ask if I was going out there looking for property myself.
And if someone is looking at past performance of a particular property or area, does that necessarily indicate future performance?
Depends on what you mean by past performance. There's some suburbs in Melbourne where it's basically a very steady line up, right? So in that case, providing that the infrastructure is there, people still want to live there, I can't see why that wouldn't continue on happening. But let's use COVID as an example. There was a lot of suburbs across the country that wouldn't normally be a desirable place to live or to move your family to or to go and look for work, but people did. So there was a supply and demand issue, and that's spiked some properties. You've heard the news, some suburbs growing by 25-26%, right? Just because it happened for 1 year doesn't mean that trend is going to continue on happening. Right. So I think understanding why the prices jumped and understanding the risks of what could happen if I buy it this high price, and then all the people that thought, oh, I want this country lifestyle, I'm going to move to a rural area, then start moving back to bigger cities, what's going to happen to the property prices there? They're going to drop. Mm-hmm. Right, so now you've got a mortgage at $600,000, your property is worth $450,000. What do you do then?
Yeah, so if you had to narrow it down to a checklist, so to speak, what would your non-negotiable requirements be if you were looking to invest?
Your why,
yeah,
your strategy, your team. So when I'm saying team, do you have a good mortgage broker, good accountant, good quantity surveyor? Someone that mentors you. If you've not done this before, there's a reason why only 8% of the Australian population are investors, right? It's a very small percentage of Australia. There's a reason why that figure exists. It's because it isn't as easy as some people might think. You just don't go and buy a property and then go and buy another property and then go and buy another property and then all of a sudden you've got this comfortable retirement. You need to utilize your tax position. You need to make smart decisions. And like I mentioned in the beginning of the podcast, time is crucial. Time is very crucial when it comes to property investing. So if you're going to buy a property that's not quite right for you, you hold on to that property for 6 years, then you have to sell that property, pay capital gains tax if there is any on that, and then start again. So you've just lost 6 years. So in terms of your checklist, you need to have a good team around you that can have a look over the decisions you are making and give you some sort of guidance. I wouldn't be going about this myself at all. If you don't want a mentor, at least get a really good accountant and a good mortgage broker to make sure you've got good loan structures. There's flexibility in your loan, all of those kind of things. Make sure you've got a good conveyancer, right, to ensure that the contract that you are entering into isn't heavily focused towards the vendor. It's a nice balanced contract. Yep. Make sure you've got enough time in that contract to settle. So you need to be speaking to your broker to understand how long are they going to need to settle, because the risks are you don't settle in time. You get penalty interest from the vendor because you haven't settled when you're supposed to settle. Now you have to come up with cash that you weren't expecting to come up with in the beginning. And then probably the last thing is making sure that you continuously review the portfolio. So you want to be somewhere in between forgetting that you own that asset in the first place, but understanding the bits that you need to review. So am I on the right interest rate? Am I getting the right rent for that property? Are the people in my property trashing it? Am I having to spend more money on maintenance? All of those kind of things you need to review, but you shouldn't be going out every year getting evaluation done, seeing how much your property has grown in such a short period of time. You need to give it a good 3-year block, 2-3 years
right
between each property.
Yeah. And you mentioned before about when you're sort of first looking at sourcing a property, making sure your numbers and your cash flow works out. What are some things that you look at? I know you just mentioned, you know, rents and all that sort of stuff. What are some other things you look at to make sure that it does work out in your favor, depending on what your goals and strategy is, of course?
Your tax position. Okay, so how is this property going to affect your tax position is particularly important. At the moment, you're essentially giving that money away to the ATO. You're not giving it away, it's a tax, but you're doing nothing to actually claim that back. So if you actually think about the logic behind that, makes no sense to use a proportion of your income, right, when you've got the ability to access some of those tax benefits. So really understanding that and having an accountant that is pro property investing, that understands depreciation and it can help you plan, and a really clear understanding of what you are willing to sacrifice. Okay. Right. So sitting down with your broker, understanding what your mortgage is going to look like, understanding your lifestyle and the things that you enjoy doing that you just won't give up, and seeing if you've still got enough cash to do all the things, right? Because a lot of people that come to us, particularly when they are in their later stages of life, they started investing and then the investing just started encroaching on their personal lives, their family lives and all of those kind of things. And they went, this is too difficult. Right. I can't maintain this in the long run. What do they do? They go and sell their whole portfolio. And now they're in a situation where they're going to have to work so much more aggressively to get it to the point where they do have an unencumbered portfolio by time of retirement, where before they bought those properties had a real understanding of the impact that it's going to have on their life. And if they've got an understanding, like now we've got high interest rates, higher than what we had over the last couple of years, understanding that that is a short-term pain for long-term gain, you just need to be able to say in your mind, I'm willing to sacrifice this for a short period of time to achieve my longer term goals. And that's a lot harder to do if you don't understand why you are investing in the first place. Like if there's no emotional connection to that end goal, people are going to fail. And that's not just in property investing, that's in people's jobs and when you take on new hobbies, all of those kind of things. If it doesn't fit into the things that you like to do, you just don't do it. That's human nature. Yeah.
Do you have a question about investing that you'd like answered? Each month, we take questions from our listeners and put them to our resident expert, Luke Harris. With more than 2 decades of residential and commercial investment experience under his belt, Luke has seen the best and the worst of the property market. Have a burning question you want answered on an upcoming episode? Visit investorintelligence.com.au/questions and ask us today.
And you talked a bit about having the right team around you before, and I do think that this would certainly help in this situation where people lose track of their why and what they want to achieve through their investing. Can you give me an example of how having a team can give you a strategic advantage in your investing?
Well, I could talk about this for hours. First of all, it mitigates risk, right? Having experts in their own field around you mitigates risk. Any investment is going to have risk involved with it, right? But when you go into property investing blind and you're not getting the right advice from the right people, that risk significantly increases. Yep. So that's one aspect to it. Better planning, right? If a broker understands what you're trying to do, you want to buy 3 properties, right? And you actually have that conversation with your broker, they know how to structure your loans. They know not to go for the easiest lender first. And then when you get to property 3, the requirements that you need to meet to get another loan is so far removed from what you're able to achieve that you kind of get stuck with two properties, right? So our broker, for instance, will flip that on its head and start with the most difficult lenders if she knows that there's three or four properties coming, right? Most difficult lenders, a little bit more work for her in the beginning, but in the long run, that client can buy more properties because we've structured that correctly. Yeah. And probably biggest one would be if you enter a contract that you decided, I'm not going to pay the $1,500 for a conveyancer because I want to buy this property and it doesn't matter, blah, blah, blah. I'm just going to sign the contract, pay the deposit, right? And you haven't looked into what the penalties are. I'll give you an example. We recently were presented with a contract, which we told our client not to go ahead with, for a property that's not complete.
Okay.
Right? And the contract that was presented to us was for a property that has been completed, right? So the risk if we didn't basically make our client go and have a conversation with a conveyancer would have been that they would have entered into a contract that developer could have called settlement on that property without it being completed.
Right.
Because there was no provisions in that contract for the actual purchaser to say that the property that needs to be handed over is a completed property. So in terms of having that team around you, it's making sure that you don't end up in really sticky situations and you're going into the investment in a business manner rather than I'm a novice investor. You shouldn't be investing if you give yourself that title. Yeah. In the first
so
place.
It really is crucial, especially for someone starting out, to have the right people around them.
Yeah, before you look at a property, right? Before you look at a property, because if you are going to do it yourself, we obviously introduce people to people that we've been working with for just about a decade, right? But if you are going to do it yourself, that needs to be done before you start looking at property. You need to know who your team is. You need to know your strategy. Then go and look for property. Yep.
So once you've done that, what other strategic advantages would there be in working with specifically someone such as yourself in sourcing that property?
Okay, so first of all, we are in the market on a daily basis. So most investors are going to be buying a property every 2 or 3 years, right? If you've got the right structures in place and you've got the right salary, every 2 or 3 years. So you are entering the property market every 2 or 3 years and probably doing your research around that for 2 months before you go and purchase a property, just for argument's sake. We do it on a day-to-day basis, right? The second aspect is we don't look at properties that other people have access to at the time when we present it to you. That property would have been taken off the market so we can present it to you, and then you'll follow up with an EOI, which will give you 7 days to essentially go and do all your due diligence. So you're not going straight from here's the offer, signing a contract. There's a bit of a 7-day period where you speak to your team and you make sure you remove any risk that's applied to it. Then you make a decision on whether you're going to buy that property. Right. And then most of all, how I mentioned before, when things get difficult and people go, okay, well, this has happened in my life. I'm going to sell this investment property, right? Our job is to make sure that you see the bigger picture, right? That you can identify whether this thing that's happened in your life is a short-term or long-term thing. So an example would be, I've just been made redundant from my job, right? So let's go and sell the whole portfolio, right? First question you need to ask yourself, have you worked your whole life? Can you get another job? Why would your reaction be to sell your portfolio? And it happens more often than not, right? So that's a short-term thing where the solution isn't selling your portfolio. The solution is getting another job.
Yep.
Our job is to make sure that we keep you on track there, but also hold you back sometimes when we think that you might not be emotionally, educationally, and financially ready to take those steps, because we'll end up with the same result. You'll jump into it, realize that, hey, this is not as easy as what I thought. It's not like buying a property and then forgetting about it. I actually have to make sure that I manage it, that there's tenants and then all of those kind of things. If you weren't mentally prepared for that before you went into it, if you didn't have the education to make your own business decisions, right? What are you going to do? You're going to sell that property, which means you've just paid stamp duty on a property that you will never get back, because you'll sell that property. Any profit you will make from that property, you'll pay capital gains tax on. And then you've just lost, what, 30K in stamps. Whatever profit you've made from it gets cut by 50%, depending on your salary. So you're actually worse off than buying that property in the first place.
Right.
If you if you entered that understanding why you're doing it, understanding the questions you need to ask, understanding the bigger picture, that's not going to happen for
right.
you.
And the properties that you source your members, they aren't properties that anyone can go on realestate.com or domain and find themselves, are they?
First of all, I don't source any properties for my members. Luke Harris sources all of our properties here. It's taken him 2 decades to build the relationships that he has in the property industry. We've been operating for 9 years as a business, but Luke's been in the property market for 20 years, right? Even if you started today to try to build those relationships up with investors, you could never get there because first of all, they're not going to take your call, right? Why should they take your call? You're just another individual that wants to buy one of their properties. So the person that you are going to be speaking to is the person that was appointed to sell that property. It's not the vendor. The vendor is the person we deal with directly. So we get access to these projects before they get released to the market. We can cherry pick which lots we want because those lots make sense
right.
from an investment perspective. Yep. I promise you, I deal with vendors here as well. If you as an individual call them up and say, hey, can we have a chat and can you let me know about your upcoming projects and things like that, you're going to get a very rude awakening to their response.
Okay, so just to wrap this up. So when you're typically working with one of your members, you're sourcing properties, you're, you know, building up their portfolio. What does that long-term strategy look like with working with someone such as yourself?
So each strategy is going to be specific to the person's situation, right? So there's no blanket plan or strategy that you can just plug into your own situation and then that's going to work. We need to look at everything. And when I say everything, when are you planning on having kids? Are you sending those kids to private school or public school? Right? How long are you going to be on maternity leave for? When are you planning to get married? How much is that going to cost you? When are you moving into your PPR? It is endless, the questions that goes into the strategy, because we need to plan for these things. We can't be planning for these things when it's happening, because that's when you make reactive decisions rather than proactive decisions.
Right.
Yeah. So almost forgot the word there. So our strategy in summary, it's accumulation, correction, and then debt reduction. So if I'm going to make it really basic and bring it down to its lowest denominator, that's what we look at. How many assets do we need under our name at time of retirement? What does that portfolio need to look like? Once you've secured that portfolio and you want to kind of do that in a 5-6 year gap or 5-6 year period, once you've secured that portfolio, when are you going to need to do renovations on that property, right? Are those renovations going to come right at time of retirement and then you need to come up with a bunch of cash? How are we planning for that, right? So that's the correction stage, is going, okay, we know there's going to be expenses involved with owning a property, right? How are we planning for that? Where's that money coming from? So you don't get 10 years down the track, 15 years down the track and go, oh, this property needs a new kitchen.
Right.
Where am I going to get the money to do that? Or I can't rent this property out because it's now 25 years old and it's a little bit run down. I need to do a whole renovation on that. So these things need to be planned for, and that's what we do in the correction stage. We also then obviously look at how the property portfolio is performing. Are we getting the right capital growth rates? What's the yield like on the property? What's the vacancy rates been like on the property? Is it empty for long periods of time? During that correction stage, we want to correct as quickly as we possibly can, so we can get back into the market and have enough time. And then the debt reduction stage, even though I put that as the last part of the strategy, it really kind of starts not long after your first 5 year period, because like I said, you need 25 years. You need to be talking to your accountant, financial planner about your tax structures and how you can utilize that to help you reduce debt.
Right. So it sounds like there's a lot that goes into every stage of the investing journey, a lot that goes into not just sourcing the property, which a lot of people jump to. There's a lot of stuff that needs to go with that.
Yeah, to give you an indication, so I do, I put together most of the strategies and run them by Luke after I've put them together. It takes a mentor about 2 or 3 meetings to get all the information that they need. And it takes me about 2 or 3 days to put that presentation together. Then it gets run by Luke to make sure that everything fits in and it all makes sense, right? And then we present it to our client. So it's not just going, oh, you buy property, now it's going to be paid off by this year. No, life happens in between that.
Yeah.
And we need to plan for life.
Yeah. Okay, so when you're developing that strategy, obviously having all those meetings, there's a lot of stuff that goes into it. And I'm assuming that you are better versed to ask someone those questions than they might be themselves. If someone was wanting to work with you and the team at the Property Mentors, how would they get in contact with you?
You can visit us on tpm.au and follow the link there to book in a discovery call. We also host workshops every alternate Tuesdays and Wednesdays every single week from, I think, 6:30 till 7:30 from memory. Those workshops will essentially take you through our roadmap to success, which feeds into the strategy. Right. And we'll go through some of the questions that you really should be asking yourself, particularly when it comes to your educational readiness, financial readiness, and most importantly, emotional readiness. And by the time you finish any of these sessions, I promise you, it will be an experience that you haven't actually done yourself. Like, just ask yourself the question, when was the last time you sit down with your partner and wrote down all your goals? Wrote down what you want to achieve out of life.
Yeah.
That's a quick question, Jacob. Like, when was the last time?
When was the last time I sat down? Well, I can't even remember. Actually, I sat down on the weekend to develop a plan around my budget, but not around my whole goals in the future. So I definitely do agree that is something that people can do more of. And whereabouts are they located, these workshops?
Just at our office in Brand.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah. Well, it's been fantastic having you. We will put links to everything that you mentioned in the show notes. And thanks for your time, Herman.
Thanks for having me, Jacob.
If you found this episode or any of our episodes helpful, please make sure to share and leave a rating to help us reach more people on their investing journeys. And of course, subscribe to be notified when new episodes drop. Make sure to follow the podcast on Instagram at Investor Intelligence Podcast. You can find links to our other socials in the show notes, including a link to the Property Mentors weekly blog. If you're ready to get your property portfolio in shape for financial freedom, check out Luke's latest book, Property Fit. You can get yourself a copy at www.propertyfitbook.com.au.